Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Salvatore Scellato, and I am a PhD student at the University of Cambridge. And today, I'm going to present you our work on geosocial metrics for online social networks. And in this talk, geo will be for geographic and not for geometric, as in the previous one. This is a joint work with my supervisor, Cecilia Mascolo at Cambridge, with Mirko Musolesi from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, and Vito Latora from the University of Catania in Italy. So the motivation behind our work lies in the increasing amount of online social network services which provide location-based features or which provide in any way geographic information about the location of their users. For instance, there are some services like Foursquare and Gowalla that are mainly based on the idea of broadcasting your location to the set of your friends. Twitter has already launched geolocation features both for users and also for single messages that are sent through the service, and Facebook, according to what they say, is going to add these features in the next future. So we have seen many more services with these features. They're becoming more and more important. They are attracting more and more users. So we thought it's really important now to understand what role geography and, in general, space are playing into shaping both the structure of this social network and also how they are influencing the social phenomena that take place on these networks, and social phenomena like information dissemination, the propagation of social trust, the propagation of social influence, and so on. In order to do so, our first step was to understand how geography and space is affecting the structure of the social networks. So our idea in this case was actually to take one of these social networks, and since we know both the social connections and the position of the users, we are going to put these users on a map. And as soon as we put these people on a map, we need to stretch their social ties across space. And as soon as we did it, we realized that there was a very important factor that we were missing, a factor that which we were not taking into account in usual social network analysis. And this factor was the geographic distance. Why distance? Well, because distance matters. It has been found in recent years, both for online and also for offline social network, for any type of social interaction, that the probability of friendship between two individuals actually decreases as a function of distance with a certain law. So since distance is already shaping so much every single link that we create across space, we thought, why don't we try to put distance as a factor only in standard social network metrics? Why don't we try to include the importance of distance in standard social network analysis? And by doing this, we can actually try to understand if we can answer some interesting questions. For instance, can we really discriminate between users according to their attitude towards long-range ties? So can we understand if some users enjoy more local connection, so they try to connect only with people nearby, and maybe some other users are more global users and connect with people all around the world? And then, when we find the clusters of friends, can we really understand how they are spread over space together? And more on, can we understand how the information is propagated across space when this information is sent over social links? And finally, can we improve design, real system, and real applications that take advantage of this new layer of geographic information about social networks? We are going to answer the first two questions in today's talk, and we are going to see how it will be a bit easier to think about solutions for other questions with the help of our geosocial metrics. So, in order to play with this system, in order to be able to understand what's going on with this system, we need a sort of abstract representation, which we called a geographic social network. The idea is really simple. So, given a social graph with n nodes and k edges, and given the geographic position of all the nodes over the planet, we are going to place all these nodes in a two-dimensional metric space, where the distance that we use is the great circle distance over the planet, the simplest one that we can think of. And then we will assign a weight to each edge, which is exactly equal to the geographic distance between these two users. So for instance, in this example, we see that this social network has been weighted, all the edges have been weighted with the actual geographic distance between the two users. on this geographic social network, so on this representation, we will define two different new geosocial metrics that try to understand, that try to put in geographic distance and social properties. The first one is called node locality, and it tries to capture how close are your friends to your same position. The second one is called the geographic clustering coefficient, and is a generalization of the normal clustering coefficient, which now takes into account how the nodes are placed over space. So in this example, we see, for instance, that user A and user D have the same arrangement of social links. So by using normal social network metrics, we can't see if they are different or not. They are structurally equivalent. But actually, when we see their position on the planet, and so when we see their geographic properties, we see that they have different properties, because user A have much longer ties, and even if they share a triangle, this triangle has a different shape. And we can actually tell that they are different by using our geosocial metrics. So this is the improvement that we are going to have by using this geosocial metric instead of normal network metrics. But let's consider these metrics one by one. The first one, node locality, tries to answer the question, how close are the neighbors of a node to the node itself? How close in space they are? Our aim while defining these metrics is to highlight only extremely short-range social ties. We want to see if social connections arise at very short scale. Then we want to have a measure which is normalized for nodes with different degrees. And finally, we would like to be able to compare these metrics when it's computed for different networks with different geographic scales. So when we compute the node locality of node I, we will consider every neighbor j of node I. And for every neighbor, we will consider the link length lij, which is a distance, and we will put this distance into an exponential function, so that when I and j are close together, the distance is small, and so the exponential function goes up to 1. While when they are far from each other, the link length will be larger, and the total weight will be down. Then we are going to add a network scaling factor beta, which will help us to take into account how distances between nodes are distributed in a different way in different network. We are going to see how important it is and how we are going to choose these for real systems. And finally, since we are summing over all the neighbors of node I, we will normalize the result with the node degree. So by definition, this metric is always between 0 and 1, and it is 1 only when all the neighbors of node I are in the same position of the node itself. Otherwise, the metric will go down. At the same time, we will define the geographic clustering coefficient, which tries to answer the question, how are spatially interconnected the neighbors of a given node? Our aim here is to generalize the standard clustering coefficient by taking into account what's the distance between the users that generate triangles in a node's neighborhood. We again want to highlight only extremely short-range social triangles, and again, we want to have a metric which can be compared across networks with different geographic scales. So when we compute the geographic clustering coefficient of node I, we are going to consider all the triangles I, j, k that we have in its neighborhood, and for every triangle, we define a triangle size which is exactly equal to the maximum length among the three links that we have in this triangle, in every triangle. So for instance, in this example, the longest link will be the link IK. So the triangle size would be LIK. Then for every one of these triangles that we find in the neighborhood, we are going to put the triangle sides into an exponential function so that when the three nodes are close to each other, the triangle sides will be small and the exponential function will go up to 1. While as soon as one of the three nodes is far away from the other two, the triangle sides will immediately be larger and the weight of that triangle will be lower. So again, we are going to use an exponential function to highlight these extremely short-range links. We are going to use a network scaling factor beta to take into account how nodes can have a different distribution of distances among them. And since we are summing over all the triangles, we need to normalize with the number of total possible triangles so the number of total possible ordered couples of neighbors. So by definition, the geographic clustering coefficient is again a number between 0 and 1. And it's 1 only when not only all the neighbors of a node are in the same position of the node itself, but also when these neighbors are all interconnected with each other. So we see that differently than the clustering coefficient, if we have many triangles, but if a node has many triangles, but these triangles are span a big geographic space, the geographic clustering coefficient will go down. So we want to see if these triangles arise only at very short scales. We have seen in both metrics the use of this scaling factor beta. This is a key factor because this will allow us to compare the geosocial metrics when they are computed in networks with different scale. Just consider for 1 second a social network of people living in Boston with their geographic information in the city, and then a social network of people, of users living in Canada with their geographic information in Canada. Obviously, the network in Canada will have a much larger geographic scale, so the distance and between the nodes in Canada will be much larger, but still, we would like to be able to see that a particular user in Canada has connections that are shorter than the average of the usual connection. And we would like to see the same for Boston. So by using different scaling factor, we can take into account how different networks have different scales. And we can see, for instance, in this toy example, we have graph 1 and graph 2. In graph 1, all those links have length k. And then graph 2 has been created by scaling all the distances in the graph by a factor of 2. If we use beta 1 as a scaling factor in graph 1, it's easy to understand what type of beta we need to use for graph 2, because since all the lengths have been scaled by the factor of 2, if we use beta 2, which is equal to 2 times beta 1, the two geosocial metrics will have the same values, because for us, the two geographic social networks represent the same they have the same geosocial properties. After defining these geosocial metrics, we decided that we needed to test if they were able to understand how the geographic and social properties of different networks are. So we crawled the 4 different data sets. We sampled them. 2 purely location-based social networks, like Brightkite and Foursquare, mainly based on the idea of broadcasting your location. 1 blogging community, LiveJournal, and then microblogging service, Twitter. These datasets are quite heterogeneous, both in terms of what they offer to the users and both in terms of how we gather them, and also in the way they present the location information about the users, because the first 2 have GPS accuracy for the home location of all the users, while, for instance, LiveJournal just provide a text-based description of the home location of a user, which is actually input by the user himself. And Twitter has a mixture of GPS-based accuracy for people who use smartphones and text-based location. So in order to be able to represent these datasets as geographic social networks, we needed to process LiveJournal and Twitter in order to map this description to points on the planet. And we used the public Yahoo geocoding API to do that. And this is a service which mainly transforms a string which describes a place into the most likely place that string represents. Obviously, this process is a difficult process. There are many problems with geocoding because it's full of ambiguities. And so we were helped by the fact that the Yahoo geocoding API actually gives us, for every translation, the accuracy of the translations. And so we discarded all the users that did not have an accuracy at least of city level. So after these pre-processing steps on the 2 of the 4 datasets, we ended up with 4 complete datasets. They have different sizes, different properties. So we see that LiveJournal is about 1 million users, while instead Twitter has many more as 400,000 users, but many more edges with about 180 million edges. So they have different sizes. They are heterogeneous. Then we compute some standard social metrics, the average degree. Again, we immediately see that Twitter is really different than the others in the sense that it's a very dense network. We have a lot of connections, and in average, every user has about 450 connections. While the clustering coefficient is more or less in agreement with what you usually find in other social network systems. After that, we proceeded and we computed some geographic properties of these datasets. So we computed the average link length in the four datasets, and we found that location-based social networks have shorter average link length. The shortest one is Foursquare, and then Brightkite and LiveJournal, while Twitter is the one with the largest average link length. So this is already telling us that our samples represent users that have a very good attitude towards long-range connections. So in Twitter, users actually try to create these long-range connections, and the result is that on average, a link is about 5,000 kilometers, so it's much longer than the entire size of the United States. We also computed the average user distance, so the distance between all the nodes, regardless of the links that they have among them. And we found that Brightkite, LiveJournal, and Twitter have more or less the same average distance. So this is a proxy measure for the actual size of the system, while Foursquare is smaller. And this is due to the fact that when we crawled Foursquare, the service was available only in 100 cities all around the world. So obviously this put a limit to the total size of the system. After that, we analyzed also the cumulative distribution of these social link lengths, and we see something interesting. We see that in Foursquare, for instance, about 60% of all the links are shorter than 100 kilometers, and actually they are shorter than 1 kilometer. So these links are all links between users in the same city. So there is a very large proportion of links between users that live in the same place. This proportion is a bit lower in Brightkite, also in LiveJournal, but still, it's a good proportion. About one-third of all the links are shorter than 100 kilometers. So geographic distance is probably playing a role in these networks. While in Twitter, we see that only 4% of all the links are shorter than 100 kilometers. So we are seeing that in our sample, Twitter users enjoy the creation of very long connection. So this is already telling us that the geosocial properties of Twitter will be fairly different than the other datasets. And then finally, we computed the geosocial metrics of our datasets. And we already see that the average node locality of the two location-based social networks, Brightkite and Foursquare, is the largest one. While LiveJournal, node locality is smaller, and in Twitter is a lot smaller than in the other datasets. So this is telling us that there are a lot of nodes that in Brightkite and Foursquare create connections only with people nearby, and this is not true in LiveJournal and Twitter. And when we computed also the average geographic clustering coefficient, we saw that Brightkite and Foursquare, again, have the largest values, and then LiveJournal and Twitter have smaller values. It's also interesting to note that the ranking that we get by using the normal clustering or the geographic clustering is different, because Twitter has the second largest clustering coefficient, but it has the smallest geographic clustering coefficient. So this is telling us that in Twitter there are triangles in a good proportion, but these triangles are not small. So these triangles are created among people that are far away from each other. And this is probably an indication that the users in our sample don't use Twitter just as a social network, because probably they want to connect with people not because they are close to those people, but just because they are celebrities, they are news media sources, they are important users in a particular topic. So we see that the Twitter properties are also emerging in a geosocial analysis. Finally, when we see the cumulative distribution of node locality, we see that in Brightkite and Foursquare, there is a good proportion of nodes with extremely high values of node locality, so very close to one. These are users that we can call hyperlocal. They just create connections with people nearby. They never create connections with people far away from them. This is not happening in LiveJournal and Twitter. So probably this is something that we see in location-based services, because the user experience that they offer actually foster the serendipitous discovery of people around you. This is confirmed also by the geographic clustering coefficient. In the distribution, we see these proportional nodes with extremely high values of geographic clustering. So they have many friends that are friends with each other, and they are all in the same place. This is not happening, again, in LiveJournal nor in Twitter, where people mix less, mix more regardless of distance. So, if we want to recap the findings of the of our geosocial metrics, we have discovered that with these social metrics, we can actually see how location-based services foster user interaction on shorter distance, and how they highlight that these services have many users with a predominance only of local ties and local triangles. Twitter, instead, does not exhibit this hyper-local behavior. And if you're interested in the paper, there are more analyses about correlations with node degrees. And we have found that, in general, when a user has a higher degree, then the geosocial metrics are lower. So the user is more global. While this is not always true on Twitter, where the influence of celebrities and of the fact that it's not just a pure social network shows us some interesting correlations. So in conclusion, so we have seen how geographic information can be studied and represented for social networks. We have defined two new geosocial metrics, node locality and geographic clustering coefficients, that try to put together social properties and geographic distance. Then we have collected four large-scale online datasets, and we have analyzed them with our metrics, highlighting the differences among them. And in the future, we are going to study how information is propagating over Twitter over space. So what is the role of distance in the propagation of information? Then we want to combine user mobility with geosocial metrics. And it would be really interesting to come up with a general geographic generative model, maybe adapting the work of the previous talk to these particular dimensions, where dimensions here can actually be geographic distance. Thank you very much, and I will now happily answer your questions.
Hi, Salvatore. I had a question about your Twitter data. You restricted yourself only to the fraction of tweets that had location information in it, right?
Not the fraction of tweets, the fraction of users.
Okay, yeah. What fraction was that?
In my dataset, the user with a meaningful location information was slightly above two-thirds, so about 70%. While when we tried to come up with the location of a user according to the geolocation of their messages, this proportion was really small, below 0.1%.
Okay. Yeah, because I was worried because you're comparing them to Foursquare, where virtually everybody discloses location information. You have nearly complete data.
Yeah, so this is why we are talking about heterogeneous data set collected in different ways. So this is more a way of presenting new tools rather than a way of discovering properties of the system. In order to be able to see something, to say something about Twitter, you should have the complete data set with a complete geographic information. And this is not going to happen because still they are not enforcing these on Twitter.
Hi, I'm Harsh from UMass Lowell. My question is, you mentioned as per the 2011 statistics, 60 to 65% of Twitter users are US users. And if you compare, 14% goes to like Europe and those countries. So if you take an instance of Paris Hilton, now Paris Hilton is more famous in United States, so chances of people making her as a friend is more than people from UK. So I don't get the statistics of why, you know, people, friends are distributed throughout the world. Like, people tend to make friends among their own group. Like, people in the United States have chances of making friends with people in the United States itself rather than somebody from India or Korea or Japan.
Yes. So I assume the question is, how do you cope with the fact that there will be biases in the way people create their social connections?
Yeah.
No? And yeah, this is something that we know. So we actually investigated this relationship between the probability of creating a link as a function of distance. And also in our data sets, we found that it's actually going down with distance pretty fast. But it's also important to see that in social networks like Twitter, And also in Life Journal, we have seen something similar. People are not limited by geographic distance. So when they connect to somebody else, they don't just look at the distance between them because they are looking in a different dimension. So if we think about the previous dimensions, you may add a user on Twitter because you are from the same country, but you might add a user on Twitter because it's interested in your same research topic or because you share the same music tastes. So there are different dimensions. We are just exploring here one of these dimensions, which is geography. But still, I think that if you generalize this concept of distance across different dimensions, you might come up with a similar relationship between the probability of being friends and the distance in this particular space.
I don't know if this is possible, but with the Foursquare data, is it possible to figure out how far two people were apart when they like became friends? Because I could imagine lots of us could become friends here. We were all geographically close to each other. And then when we go back to where we normally are, we'll be far apart. So I don't know if that's possible, but that would be interesting to look at. And then also in Twitter, I don't know if you've looked at only edges which are reciprocated in each direction. And maybe that would result in Twitter being more geographically compact.
So yeah, the first question, we can actually try to analyze this behavior by doing, we can't get the information about when a link was created in Foursquare, nor we can understand where a user was in a particular time. But if you manage to do probably an almost daily crawl of the surveys and you will get this incremental information, you can probably answer that question and see what's going on. The second was the interaction. So we're actually trying to see if you remove the non-reciprocated edges, the properties are not different in our case, because in our case, there are a lot of reciprocated edges, because usually when you don't reciprocate an edge is because the other user is a celebrity, is not aware of you, and so on. So all these non-reciprocated edges will be to the same user, and so they're not affecting a lot the behavior of the other user. We're actually looking if interaction graphs, so the graph of people you interact with on Twitter, exhibit different things, and we are going to process a data set of messages now.
Last year, you were talking about generalization to the clustering coefficient to take account of temporal aspects. So the obvious thing is you're going to look at spatiotemporal clustering generalizations. So it sort of follows on from the interaction graph. But.
Yeah, this is a very interesting question because it's actually difficult. It's a similar problem with communities. How do you define a spatial community or a temporal communities? People that are at the same place at the same time, or people that are at the same time connected in different things, but then they, in a third time, connect together. So I guess taking into account both space and time would be tricky, but it's definitely something that, especially because now these mobile social networks are actually fostering the idea of meeting somebody in a new place, this is something that we would definitely look at.
If there are no other questions, let's thank the speaker again.